Well, good evening, everyone. Excuse me. I think I spoke here just a few weeks ago, and at that time I brought up the first line of the Mountains and Waters Sutra, which says, "These mountains and waters of the present are the expressions or the sayings of old Buddhas." So tonight, I'm going to bring forth an expression or a saying from an old Buddha named Nanxuan, an old Chinese Buddha ancestor from the 8th century in China. And he had a dialogue with his student, Zhao Jiao, and the opening of that dialogue is a very famous Zen aphorism, which is, ordinary mind is the way, or sometimes we hear it translated as everyday mind is the way. So I've been giving that aphorism some thought lately, and I think when we hear an expression like that, it's important to think about what ears we're hearing it with, because you know if we only hear that expression with our sentient being hat on, and we think about our everyday mind, which, you know, gets frustrated, is impatient, rages about various things that it has no control over. We might think, you know, based on a careful review of the way we talk to ourselves and the way we talk about what's going on, that we might think if my everyday mind is the way, I'm corrupting the way every time I turn around. So, you know, we could have that kind of, understanding, I suppose. But there's another ear to listen to that aphorism with. We should open our Dharma ears. We should open our ears to the liberating intent of such a phrase. And we should open our ears from the perspective of just sitting still. And then we should inquire, what's meant there? How is Nanxuan really trying to help us with that statement? And that's the kind of inquiry, Dharma inquiry, that we might profit from. So, thinking about ordinary mind, and chapter in Tsuki Roshi's posthumously collected book of lectures called "Not Always So." There's a chapter in that. In that book called "Brown Rice is Just Right," ordinary daily brown rice is just right, and so I read that chapter, which is only two pages, and I wrote a quote here, which is Suzuki Roshi says, The most important point is to establish yourself in a true sense without establishing yourself in delusion. And yet we cannot live or practice without delusion. Delusion is necessary, but delusion is not something on which you can establish yourself. It is like a stepladder. Without it, you cannot climb up, but you don't stay on the stepladder. With this confidence, you can continue to study our way. So, you know, we may have a deluded mind, and we may manifest that delusion in myriad ways. Of course, we're, you know, always making our best effort to, you know, put our best foot forward and so on. But, you know, we notice that I certainly notice that my effort is imperfect. My expressions are imperfect, and that the impatient, frustrated, complaining mind of a sentient being sometimes comes through. But this is our situation, you know. We don't practice just from some standpoint of, you know, already being perfected. We practice based on who we are right now. We're not trying to really get rid of that, you know. I was at thinking about this topic, and I remembered a lecture that a Dharma talk that I went to. I think Karen Hamilton also went to this Dharma talk. Maybe somebody else here was at this Dharma talk too. It was a while back, and it was by this Dharma talk was by Catherine Thanos. Catherine Thanos was the one of the founding teachers of the Santa Cruz Zen Center. And in this talk, Catherine's background was as an artist. She was trained as an artist. She went to the San Francisco Art Institute. She trained as a painter. I think maybe she, you know, was quite a good painter, although I don't think I ever saw any of her paintings. But she decided at a not too young age to give up painting and art and devote herself to the Buddha way. And she became a Zen priest and a teacher. In this talk, she said that in the neighborhood where she lived in Sacramento, sorry, she didn't live in Sacramento, in Santa Cruz, in the neighborhood she lived in Santa Cruz, there was a yellow house near where she lived. And every time she would pass by that yellow house, she couldn't stop herself from complaining about the color. She couldn't stop herself from objecting to the decision to paint that house yellow. And she was a Zen priest, and she knew that a discriminating, you know, mind like that wasn't helpful. But she also knew that there was no point or need to hide her discriminating mind from herself or other people. So we don't need to, you know, hide our discriminating mind. We don't need to deny it, denigrate it, try to squash it. We just confess it all the time. We just confess and acknowledge and tell others about our discriminations. And this is a way of actually being careful with people and being kind with people, and also being careful with ourselves and helping ourselves by not concealing our delusion, our lack of virtue, our lack of perfection. So I wanted to read you this is a famous story, Ordinary Mind is the Way, and that's just the opening line of the story. And the story is a dialogue between Nan Xuan and his famous student, Zhao Zhou. So I know a lot of you know this story, but it's like Mio says, it's a campfire story. These Zen koans are like campfire stories, so we like to tell them over and over again. So I'm going to tell this one over again. For some of you, and maybe some of you will hear it for the first time, so how wonderful that will be. Zhao Zhou, that's the student, asked Nan Xuan, "What is the way?" Nan Xuan replied, "Ordinary mind is the way." Zhao Zhou asked, "Then may I direct myself toward it?" Nan Xuan replied, "The more you seek after it, the more it runs away." Zhao Zhou asked again, "If I do not seek, how can I know about the way?" Nan Xuan replied, "The way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. To know is to have a concept. To not know is ignorance. When you realize the way of no doubt, it is just like the sky, wide open, vast emptiness. How can you say yes or no to it?" So, you know, when I'm thinking about a topic, for Dharma talk, of course, it pervades my life, and it pervades my zazen. So at some point, this image came to me of, which seems rather odd in relationship to the story, I know, but bear with me. The image came to me of a Christmas tree. And of course, it's kind of appropriate to the season because I think we're going to come into December tomorrow. And so many people will be going out and they will be purchasing a Christmas tree, an evergreen tree. And they'll be looking for the most, beautiful tree, the one that's branched just so. I remember in my childhood, when we'd go look for the Christmas tree, and my father was a tremendous perfectionist, and it had to be just so. The Christmas tree, the branching had to be just so. Anyway, people will be going out and looking for the Christmas tree of their choice. And you know, they'll bring it home, and the Christmas tree, the tree itself will be quite wonderful. You know, it'll be beautifully branched, and it'll be just the right height, and it will be very green, and it will smell very wonderful. You know, bring it in the house, and it just makes the house smell wonderful. But very few people will just go purchase the tree and bring it into the house and put it in the corner and say, ah, now our Christmas tree is here. How wonderful. It's not quite enough for us. The tree itself, it isn't quite enough. So we bring out the ornaments and the star and the tinsel, and we dress it up, and you know, we dress it up with memories, and we dress it up with heirlooms and so forth, and then we say, well, that now it's now it is fully adorned. It is a fully adorned Christmas tree. So, you know, this of course, we're all in the culture of Christmas trees, so maybe you put up Christmas tree. I don't know, maybe I'll put up a Christmas tree, I don't know. But in any case, my point that I would like to make is that this process of adornment is one that we might profitably look at, and we might profitably think about in relationship to, you know, ordinary mind is the way. Oh, what about unadorned, undecorated mind is the way? What about a mind that we're not always and constantly exposing to thoughts about the past, about the present, about the future? Oh, what about that unadorned mind? Is there something there that is valuable, something there that we can really trust, something before, a mind that's before we put on all the ornaments? Can we sit? Can we practice? Can we bring forth this unadorned mind? Because I submit that this is what Nan Chuan is encouraging his student to do. Bring forth the unadorned mind. You know, we have this life, we have been given this life, haven't we? I mean, we've been given this gift of this life. You know, we couldn't make this life happen. This life was given to us. And our breath, moment after moment, is given to us. And truly, how did this gift come to be? And we know, like, it took, I mean, if we know from science that it basically took, you know, a process of evolution over millions of years, to manifest this life that we have now been granted and given. And we are part of that. You know, we as living beings are part of that manifestation. We participate in it. There's this wonderful line by the writer Mary Lynn Robinson. Highly recommend her books if you haven't encountered them. She said this line. She says, "We participate in being without remainder, but nobody knows what being is. We participate in being without remainder, but no one knows what being is." So this is a kind of, you know, wonderful, miraculous situation that we find ourselves in, with a body and mind that can investigate, study, inquire about this being, even though nobody can say what it is. Nanchuan says, you know, we can't go chasing after the way. He says, if we chase after the way, it will run away from us. Some of the other translations says, if you go toward it, or if you try to get it, you deviate from it, you miss it. So it's just like, you know, being out in the forest. You know, if you come on a wild animal, if you want to spend some time, you know, communing with the wild animal, what do? Well, you stay very still and quiet. You don't move. You don't go toward the wild animal. You stay still and quiet. And then you have a chance, you know, to have some time with that wildness, untamed freedom of that creature. And we like to do that. I mean, we are in awe of that, actually. When we're out in the forest and we see that wild animal, we want to do that. We want to stop. We want to be still. We want to participate in that untamed spirit that's in front of us. So that's kind of like this sesshin that some of us are doing, you know. We're sitting in front of our untamed spirit. Letting our untamed spirit be. Letting it breathe. Last night, our Eno, Dora Lee, at the first night of our sesshin, read sesshin admonitions. And I'll read one of the lines or several of the lines that started our sesshin last night. Be silent and still. Sesshin is a time to diligently care for and collect body and mind in one suchness. It is an opportunity to discover anew, clarify, and actualize our ultimate concern. Please hold in your awareness that you and your Dharma friends are making an effort toward being upright and awake. So this week, you know, whether you're sitting the sesshin or not, you know, you can commit yourself to a week of considering stillness, considering being upright and forthright, and bringing forth unadorned mind to everyday mind that's behind and beneath all of the hoopla. It's good to spend some time bringing forth this mind, cultivating this mind, allowing this mind, this unadorned mind, to come forward and tell its story, tell its truth. You know, at the same time, we're kind of doing this week is kind of modified sesshin, so there's actually much more time that we're not sitting during the week than we are sitting during the week. So, you know, presumably there'll be some time for our regular personalities to be manifesting and regular difficulties to be happening and regular frustrations to be occurring. So this is a great week to just watch, you know, an ordinary sentient being just trying to get through the day. And, you know, this person also, morning and night, making an effort to sit and let go. Suzuki Roshi says, you know, climb the ladder of the step ladder of delusion, but we don't, you know, we don't, it's only a step ladder. We let it, we our ultimate, you know, wish is to let go of the step ladder, to step off of the step ladder. But nevertheless, we know that we need a step ladder. And whether we need it or not, we have one. The stepladder of delusion is going to be with us for as long as we are in this body. Delusion and realization are always practicing together, and we recognize them on the path together in our daily life, in our time on the cushion. They can integrate, you know. There can be an integration. And we should fervently wish for this. We should fervently wish for an integration of delusion and realization in our life. Both sides of the coin will be greatly blessed by this integration.